It's likely that when schools do reopen, there's still going to be some masking and distancing requirements. But having older students and staff fully vaccinated is going to be a big deal. Right now, even without a vaccine available to these populations, we find that the transmission rates are the lowest in children 10 and younger. We're just not having outbreak problems in elementary schools. It's much more often in late middle school and high school is where we see the outbreaks. And we're not completely sure why that is. It probably has to do with the fact that you know, children have very good immune systems and are, you know, able to fight off the virus more rapidly than adolescents or adults.
Thank you. Heidi or Philip?
No, I'm good.
Heidi? We can't hear you.
It's good.
Uh-oh. Can you hear us, Heidi? Darn. We are not able to hear you. So maybe we should jump over to Willie Bentz, and then hopefully Heidi can get her microphone figured out. Welcome, Willie. Hand it over to you.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner. Well, thank you, Commissioner. So I think the big update for us is, I mean, we're continuing operating. I'm getting some like residual from Heidi's attempt that's just now coming through, so apologies for that. Apologies for your struggles. We're continuing to operate our call center, and I think the biggest change and the best news is that we're able to take calls from folks who are 65 plus who don't have an email address. We can fill out a form and add them to the list to be notified when their appointment time has come, and we can help them schedule through our call center. So please, if you haven't already, if you're 65 plus, you know, you don't have an email, give us a call, 360-344-9791, and we can take your information and you'll be added to the queue, and we'll go ahead and give you a ring when it's time to schedule your appointment. I know that's been a big concern for a lot of folks. Other than that, Jefferson Healthcare is doing a lot of outreach. I'm trying to reach out to those more vulnerable folks who, again, have not been able to sign up for the email list. So they're working through lists of their patients. I know they met with you, Commissioner Dean, and they're looking at partnership opportunities with other organizations to help reach out to those folks. So there's a huge effort underway. But in the meantime, again, the quickest and easiest way, you can just simply call us and we'll add you to the list. They're also starting, I think it'll be later this week, open up the email notification list to those folks who are 50 plus and part of a multi-generational household. So do keep an eye on their website, and you can, again, it'll come out a little bit later this week, that you'll be able to sign up for a notification that an appointment is ready for you. If you're part of that group, you can see the specific definition on the site there as well. Other than that, I didn't get any KPTZ questions and no big operational updates from me. So I'll open it up to any questions from the commissioners before we go back to Dr. Locke.
I don't have a question, but I just want to report that we are on the radio now, so we can go back to the questions from the KPTZ whenever. But thanks, Willie. That's great to have the phone connection, and for those that don't have internet access, real critical gap.
Yeah. That's right, Heidi. Oh, no, still nothing. Sorry.
Heidi, you might want to call in to the phone number, please.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll try unmuting you when I find you. With a lot of colors.
Philip, did you have a question?
Yes. In terms of vaccine supply, Willie or Dr. Locke, do you have a sense of how many new, so there's second doses and then there's people getting their first dose. Any sense of what the volume of doses is for this week?
I do. We just had a hospital meeting this morning, and so the hospital did get approved for another shipment of Pfizer vaccine, which now officially is 1,170 doses. So they'll be receiving that this week, and that's for first dose administration. And then you get a paired shipment 3 weeks later of the second dose. And starting next week, Jefferson Healthcare will be doing both first and second doses at their drive-through. So they'll do, I believe, first dose in the morning, second dose will be in the afternoon, but their volume will be up to around 2,000 vaccinations per week. Currently, they're around 1,000 to 1,100 a week, but they'll almost double that as they start to do first and second doses. And we're hopeful that amount of vaccine will continue from here on out. So every week, the hospital drive-through clinic will get at least 1,100 doses of the Pfizer vaccine. Once the supply situation improves to the point that Jefferson County is eligible for even more than that, that's when we go into the mass vaccination phase. We're hoping to get word from the state this week about their new sort of more defined allocation plan. They've been working with local health departments, and we really have the goal of trying to get 3 week projections as to what the supply is going to be, and to have kind of a formal, rational way of allocating it around the state. So we know what to project, and we can start scheduling appointments out further. But even under the current restrictions, as of Friday, the hospital was scheduling or offering appointments for those that were 69 and older. And I think this week it's going to drop even below that number. So it could be down to about 67. So they're getting pretty close to the point that they will be able to offer appointments to anyone 65 years of age and older. And as Willie says, they're moving into the multi-generational households, which is a little difficult to define, but what clearly is covered by that are grandparents who are legal guardians of their grandchildren are considered multi-generational households if they're over 50. And then people over 50 who are taking care of a dependent elder are also considered multi-generational households.
And to be clear, parents and their own children are not.
Correct.
We get a lot of questions about that. Philip, I do want to be sure we get to Heidi too, since she's been muted. But go ahead, Philip.
A question for Willie, and that is, as the age profile of what is being vaccinated drops, is your call center going to continue to help those as well? So when this eventually starts opening up for the general population, is that something you're seeing continuing or not?
Yeah, at this point in time, we'll reassess as we go, but at this point in time, we are going to be maintaining operations for the foreseeable future. Because
I don't know if something's wrong with your computer, but this is happening.
Okay, sorry, I thought that was Heidi. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I don't know why you're all picking on me today, and I get the voices in the back. It's something we plan on continuing for the foreseeable future. Obviously, as we move into younger age bands, folks are going to be a little bit more computer proficient. They're going to be more inclined to have an email, et cetera. So we're likely to see the need drop a little bit. So we might reassess, but yeah, for the foreseeable future, it's been very well received. We've been able to work with a lot of folks through some issues. So we'll look at maintaining operations indefinitely for now, barring some substantial changes or some substantial drop in need.
Mm-hmm. Heidi, any luck? Okay. Willie, can you talk a little bit about how planning is going for vaccination clinics? Any timeline, or is it, that's still pretty up in the air?
You know, it's primarily up in the air just because of the vaccine supply. That continues to be the main limiting factor. And whatever vaccine, you know, we do get into this county, Jefferson Healthcare right now is the lead agency for that. They're doing a phenomenal job. So, you know, why mess with success at this point in time? Planning for that, again, we're continuing moving forward. We're going to be having a walkthrough of a clinic site here relatively soon, and we're going to be ready to be operational very shortly. Again, we just don't know when we're really going to be able to get enough vaccine to the point where we can expand operations beyond the Jefferson Healthcare site, as well as the ongoing pharmacy operations. So right now our goal is it could be as soon as the middle of this month. It might be later in the month. And we'll be ready when that time comes. But for now, this is the third week in a row that Jefferson Healthcare has been able to get some supply of first dose Pfizer vaccine. So that's starting to be a little bit more consistent, which is an excellent sign that we'll start to receive some more on top of that. So right now, yeah, in terms of a timeline, maybe mid-month, maybe a little bit later than that, certainly, certainly by the end of the month, at least we hope. So yeah.
Yeah. Anyone? Any additional questions? Do we have you? We have you for a second. I wonder, Dr. Locke, could you give us a reminder on the do's and don'ts post vaccination? For those who've been lucky to get vaccinated, how should they be approaching their behavior and mitigations?
Well, there was a KPTZ question about that, and essentially pointed out that even though the CDC doesn't have any official guidelines about that, other than the fact that if you're fully vaccinated and you're exposed to a confirmed case, you don't have to quarantine as long as you're symptom free. That is an official change. The reason there aren't official guidelines on that is that there's still some unanswered questions about risk of transmission, even by people who are vaccinated. So even though we know that it does an excellent job at preventing severe disease, you still can get mildly symptomatic disease. And theoretically, you could get asymptomatic disease too. So studies are ongoing on those. But there is some evidence, emerging evidence, to say that the vaccines make a big difference in transmission as well. And what the specific question was, you know, in effect, why can't people who are fully vaccinated from different households get together indoors? Mm-hmm. And although there are some experts that are saying they don't see the problem with that. It's something that we just don't know precisely what the risk is. We do certainly know that it's much safer to do that if you're fully vaccinated than if you're not. And as the transmission information becomes...
Can you hear me?
as we learn more, people can expect to see some more detailed guidelines, but right now the big reason that vaccinated people are still strongly urged to mask and distance and do all of those things is to protect other people from low-grade infection that they may be carrying. So it's not you've through vaccination you dramatically reduce your own risk, but we're not certain how much you reduce the risk of spreading it to other people.
Is there also an equity aspect of that too, where you know, it could like, in trying to reinforce the idea that we're all in this together, if suddenly those who have been lucky enough to be vaccinated have a world of privilege open to them that others, including many in our workforce, don't have access to, that's an unsettling kind of dynamic to avoid?
Yeah, no, that's certainly a factor. And then a third factor is the variants. is that, you know, the more we look for variants, the more different ones we find. So this is something that's been going on throughout the pandemic, is that the virus has been evolving into more transmissible forms. And so things that might have been protective 6 months ago may not be as protective now that the UK variant is, you know, very likely going to be the dominant strain in Washington State by the end of this month. It's doubling about every 10 days, the rate, and we've already seen around a dozen cases in Washington State. And the more we look, the more we're going to find. So that just reinforces the need that everyone, vaccinated or not, has to be maintaining really careful transmission prevention activities, so that we continue to suppress the infection as we get more and more people vaccinated, because in a sense we're in a race now between how fast we can vaccinate people and how fast the coronavirus variants spread. There were several questions from KPTZ listeners about, you know, how long does the vaccine last, and will booster doses be necessary? And we don't know with any certainty how long vaccine protection lasts. It's certainly more than 3 months. It's probably a year or longer, but it's now looking more and more likely that we will have some kind of booster dose at 1 year or sooner, to account for the variants. So the booster dose will not only raise your immunity that was started by the initial series, but it will also contain information on the variants, because with this new generation of vaccines, it's relatively straightforward to re-engineer the vaccine to cover different forms of the virus. It's why we're preparing in public health that we are going to be in the mass vaccination business, we think, for a long time. You know, not only getting everyone vaccinated the first time, but then every year redoing it all, revaccinating the entire U.S. population. So the scale of this is really monumental.
Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, Dr. Locke, do you see that? This, of course, is a long time out, but is that likely to become more akin to flu shots in how they're administered throughout the United States, or would it still be a public health concerted effort?
As much as possible, we would like to, you know, combine it with medical care and have the pharmacies take a lead role in it, so to make it as convenient as possible. But, you know, given the fact that, you know, we may be trying to administer, you know, 300 million doses a year, we'll probably need to invent some kind of high volume system for doing that. All of that lies ahead, and a lot of it is going to be determined by how the pandemic plays out. If we're successful in the most hopeful scenarios are that things will be substantially suppressed by this summer, and with the weather on our side, that we'll have most of the restrictions, at least business and economic restrictions, will be lifted by then, and we'll continue to have outbreaks of COVID-19, but we won't have widespread transmission. So those are the most hopeful scenarios. The more concerning ones are if you know, we have widespread variant infection and requires that these kind of, you know, what are called mitigations, these the crude tool of restricting gatherings and indoor activities, that those become necessary to control things. If our more traditional testing and isolation and quarantine is not effective. But we're trying to stay hopeful, and we're moving as fast as we can with vaccination. It's just that the message you'll hear from everyone in public health over and over again is don't let down your guard. That is really unwise to do at this time, because we still have high levels of virus circulating in the community, in all communities, especially in the I-5 corridor. And that means that there are opportunities to come in contact with the virus and get infected by it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Greg, did you have a question?
If you're done with KPTZ questions, I just kind of overarching, I don't know, crystal ball question for you, Dr. Locke, wondering, I guess, part one, have there been any negative consequences that you've seen in the data about the whole state moving to phase two? And do you have any idea what phase three might look like, or the time frame that we're talking about? Have you had any insight?
Well fortunately, we've not seen increased disease transmission based on the state moving to phase two. So although it could take longer than this to really tell it. It would likely take 3 to 4 weeks at a minimum, and possibly even longer than that, to see a change coming, say, from indoor dining, increased indoor dining. But so far so good. And no, I have not seen anything from the governor's office about what phase three would look like. I know the governor is very concerned about the variant infections as a kind of a new wild card. And one of the mistakes that's been made around the country over and over again is opening things up too early. You know, at the first sign of good news, jumping ahead and opening things, and then having the progress that's been made reversed by that premature opening. And what I've heard is the governor does not want to make that mistake, and especially in the sense that would result in hospitalizations and increased mortality. Those are the most important things to prevent. And it's often lost how extraordinarily well Washington State has done by those measures compared to other states. We are, kind of down in the, we're with Hawaii and Vermont as sort of the states with the lowest numbers of cases and lowest death rate relative to others. So I think that's really on his mind. But ultimately, this is up to the governor, unless the legislature would somehow step in and use their authority to go some different direction.
Mm-hmm. Great, thanks.
Okay. We do have a hearing in 4 minutes, and I wonder if we should take a recess to allow Commissioner Eisenhower to do some troubleshooting.
Yeah, I think it's a bid opening, but yes.
I'm sorry, bid opening. So if there's nothing further, we will bid adieu to Dr. Locke and Willie Benz. Thank you. We'll see you next Monday. Okay. And thank you to the listeners of KPTZ. Sorry about the trouble there. And Heidi was saying, let's give you a few minutes. We're going to take a recess, but give you a few minutes to make sure your equipment is back up and running, or probably an IT or something. So
can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, there's a significant delay and interruption. It seems like internet.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
KPTZ is supported by Altridge's in Uptown, offering the community local and international provisions. open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day.
And here we are back. The commissioners had a little trouble with maybe they stepped on a cord, as something I do here, and you unplug yourself all of a sudden. No, we got it on, Dr. Locke, Willie Bentz, and the commissioners. By next Monday, we will have this ironed out. They'll have it ironed out, and we will follow suit. So, until 11 o'clock in Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, I'll be your host, your friend, your DJ, your whatever it is I am.